Ito, Spiker da Sound Podcast.
Hey, Cody.
Hey.
How you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of I Thought I Heard a Sound, the podcast version. I am currently talking with Cody of the black metal experimental project Cryostasium. Do you not like being referred to as a black metal project?
No, I don't. Not anymore, because it's just not what I do anymore.
Oh, okay.
I mean, even when I was playing, I'd say so I started off as a black metal project, you know, it was all the places black metal come from, you know, and over time I started getting just the black metal, the black of the black metal kind of just didn't gel with me. You know, I was just sitting there going like, why am I calling myself black metal if I'm not even black metal, you know? But I was sitting there going, well, I sound like black metal. Doesn't that make me black metal? It's my opinion is on that one is no. Just because it sounds like Emperor or sounds like, you know, Mayhem or, you know, or Dark Throne or what have you, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't make you a black metal band. What makes you a black metal band is if you are satanic. That's what I believe.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you're definitely not that.
I'm definitely not satanic. No.
How do you feel about black metal bands that are, you know, definitely sort of against that trend? Like, I think Liturgy is definitely not a black metal band that would be considered satanic.
Right.
Correct me
yeah.
if you think differently. Same thing with Death Heaven.
I don't consider them black metal. I don't consider Death Heaven or Liturgy black metal bands, actually. Yeah. No, just because Death Heaven, actually, you know, their beliefs aren't actually satanic, I don't think, and their style of music is actually kind of more shoegaze than black metal. They just have some black metal parts in there, really good black metal parts, you know. But mostly I define Death Heaven as shoegaze.
Okay, like a heavy shoegaze.
Yeah, like a heavy shoegaze, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that assessment. I think when they were really coming up, the black metal aspect of that project was overplayed.
I think so too. That's what I think. Definitely when I heard about Death Heaven, I was in the black metal scene at that time, and I got to tell you, I didn't want to hear it at all. I heard so many things about this band that just didn't appeal to me, and like, you know, and I was just like, this is coming from a former black metal person. When something's not real black metal, and like magazines or whoever calling them black metal, kind of like frown on them, you know. You kind of like frown on them, like say, oh god, you're calling yourself black metal, but you're not black metal, don't do that, you know. You got to remove that label off Death Heaven's music in order to get it a little more, you know, I think. Yeah,
okay.
they've gotten a lot of flack from black metal, and you know, from a lot of people actually that I know of, being accused as, you know, hipsters and all that stuff. But I couldn't care less, actually, you know. It's you know, they can play whatever they want. It doesn't matter to me, you know. And if they want to call themselves black metal, then they should just accept what's going to come with that, you know. That's all.
Yeah, and I've seen them live, and
that must be nice.
They do put on a good show. I would not describe that show as black metal at all, though. It does feel like a very like, they're not gonna like they would not like this description, but a very masculine version of shoegaze.
Well, yeah.
Just kind of aggressive.
That's,
yeah,
that's what it sounds like, a more aggressive shoegaze to me, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Like bands like Alcest, that's more like aggressive shoegaze to me, even though it's got really delicate parts, you know. It's just shoegaze to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see, but you know, black metal bands to me are like, you know, Pro Fanatica, Dark Throne, Mayhem, you know, Nocturnal Blood, Black Witchery, Night End Division 187. Those are some black metal bands, Yeah, then you could definitely call them black metal.
Even though you wouldn't refer to yourself as black metal, though, I feel like the production style still carries through to, yeah, your current work.
No, I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, just as much as I don't consider myself a part of the black metal scene anymore, I still very much love the music that they make. And I've loved metal ever since I was 14 years old. Ever first hearing, Sepultura and Slayer, I was hooked since then on metal. So like, what I do, it would make sense that what I do now, would still have kind of like a weird black metal-esque feel to it,
I would love to hear about your journey from metal into some of the more experimental stuff that you're doing now, because that is also kind of my trajectory. Like I would hear about noise projects, I would hear about ambient projects and, experimental synth projects throughout my life, high school, college, afterwards, but I didn't really get it until I got into metal, specifically black metal, and started listening to Mayhem. And then there's just something about Mayhem that helped me understand what was cool about dungeon synth and like all these other sort of areas.
Man. No, I totally hear you on that, actually. You know what I mean? Because dungeon synth has so much in common with black metal. It really does. And and I can see you getting into that kind of thing with more black metal, but my experimental side came from before I even got into metal. Yeah, I was around like 12 years old. My brother was listening to everything 4 AD at the time, 1991, 92, 93. So I heard Lush. I heard, Throwing Muses was one band I heard. But my most favorite band on 4AD, and probably my most favorite experimental band ever, is Dead Can Dance, hands down. Yep, that's if I have an influence at all musically when doing this stuff, the new stuff that I'm doing, it's Dead Can Dance. But actually, don't have a band in mind when I'm writing music. But if you were to compare it to anybody right now, I'd say Dead Can Dance.
Yeah, I would not have expected that. Just having listened to your music, I guess I can understand as far as the mood of Dead Can Dance. I mean, even though a lot of their songs are fun, it does always have like kind of an oppressive atmosphere, and I definitely get that from a lot of your music.
Oppressive. Oh, that's too bad. Oh, damn.
Okay, I guess heavy,
I don't mean
just
to. Yeah,
like
I don't. I'm
weighty,
not.
consequential.
That's
That's
cool.
what I
Yeah,
mean, yeah.
I like the heavy thing. Yeah, I like
Oh,
that.
okay.
Yeah, oppressive though. I don't mean to oppress anybody. So, my favorite album from Dead Can Dance is called Within the Realm of a Dying Sun. I believe it's from around 92 or 93. If you put on that record, I swear you would probably go, oh, this is where he's getting all his influence from. It's weird. It's cool, and it's interesting, and all that stuff, But no, Dead Can Dance has always been my number one experimental band. Oh, and I should mention Cocteau Twins too. I mean, I love Cocteau Twins. They're up there. I love them.
They are one of those bands that are really remarkable for their ability to write engaging hooks. I feel like every time I put down a Cocteau Twins album and listen to other stuff and then come back to it, I like am hearing everything else that like people have done since, like in their music from like the 80s and early
Oh,
90s.
yes.
And it's crazy. It's crazy how broad their influence is.
Yeah, no, they're one of those bands that influenced, they influenced goth. They kind of, in a way, I can't say that either, because goth was actually kind of created when punk was created in the, late 70s or so, early 70s. So I can't say that, but goth and experimental, folk music and shoegaze. For Cocteau Twins, it's I think that covers experimental, shoegaze, goth, dream pop. I mean, dream pop, I'm just say that because that's an older genres, you know, in the 80s, you know, and they were actually considered the first dream pop band. So I say that too, dream pop, to describe Cocteau Twins. And just everything, something about the 4AD aesthetic, and like just even all the bands, they sounded way different from each other. They all had this one common thread, and I can't even tell you what it is, but I can tell you that it's awesome.
Looking at the cover of Within the Realm of a Dying Sun, I'm seeing some similarities between
the record of that. I'll pull that out right now.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Because
yeah.
I'm thinking that I'm seeing some similarities between that cover, or like some reference to it on the cover of your album Simulacra from earlier this year.
There absolutely is. Yes, okay. You are absolutely correct, and I'll tell you the story about the behind that.
Please.
Yes. So we got in contact with this artist, Sebastian de Sauvage. He likes to be known as Zero. So we ran into this guy, Zero. He's an artist, you know, he does digital art. We've seen his landscapes and stuff, and they're really like, you know, surreal landscapes, and I really liked what he was doing. So what I did, he asked me, what do you want the cover to look like? So I gave him two album covers. I gave him the cover for Apparitia from Celestia, and Within the Realm of a Dying Sun from Dead Can Dance. I said, mix the two of these, please. And that's what he did. He actually did that. It was great.
That's cool.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, you know, like the cover on the front, the figure on the front of Simulacra, you know, that you could almost say he took that directly from the Dead Can Dance, you know, cover. But, you know, there's some differences to it, you know, and, you know, but there's definitely, you know, that's, you know, in conclusion, that is definitely influenced by that cover 100%.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you are inspired so much by Danny Elfman's work.
Well, I love Danny Elfman's work, mm-hmm. but I can't say I'm inspired by him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's Dead Can Dance.
No. Well, I mean, that's because I grew up with Dead Can Dance, so okay. Them being an influence on me would make so much sense. I also grew up with Danny Elfman, and this was during when he was in Oingo Boingo, you know what I mean? And then he started doing scores after that. So, you know, I remember the Batman score, all that stuff. I love his work on the Batman scores. Danny Elfman, number one score. Absolutely beautiful. But
yeah, it is pretty amazing.
I wouldn't say that he's a conscious influence on my work. Yeah, but I totally get what you're saying. Absolutely.
Who would you say is kind of an active influence on your work?
Active influence. Besides, I'd say Dead Can Dance, you know what I mean? But an active influence would be bands like Manes, bands like Strid, bands like thinking of more of the Norwegian, like, you know, Thorns. I like Thorns a lot. Those melodies really influence me. And believe it or not, Zaster has an influence on me. Yeah, we were pretty tight for a while, and then we kind of parted ways, so to speak. But you know, yeah. But you know, I was in contact with Zaster for a long time, ever since he started doing his thing. And what he did was actually, you know, got me to think about doing my own thing. So I'd say, you know, as far as like conscious influence goes, it's like, you know, it's just basically in my writing. But you know, I'd say like what has come into my writing has been, I'd say, Zaster, I'd say Strid, I'd say Manes, I'd say early Arcturus, and there I go, I'm talking about black metal bands, you know. It's like, yeah. So I mean, you know, it's that's what's gotten into my influence, my psyche, I guess. So that's what's there, you know, as far as like, you know, a conscious influence goes, if you want to call it that.
But again, you don't identify yourself with black metal anymore because
no.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a satanic dude. Yeah.
Well, with your current direction, you are doing synth work. You are doing mostly instrumental compositions, and you have a an album coming up called Dragon's Keep that I believe is inspired by the film Dragonheart.
That is actually an afterthought, my friend.
Really?
Okay. Yes. All right. So the story of Dragon's Keep, the name. All right. So I wrote these songs, right? I finished these songs. I got four songs before me. And of course, you got to give it a title. You know, that's what you do with your releases, you know? So, and I'm not very great with titles, you know, I try to get to the point as much as I can, but you know, I still feel other people are better at conveying that message than I am, but still me and my brother trying to bounce back and forth some titles to him. And, you know, and I'm sending him some titles. He's going, nah, you know, that's not for you, you know? And I'm like, yeah, okay. And then I sat there and I said, what if I just fuck everything and call it Dragon's Keep? And he said, yeah. He's like, why not? Call it Dragon's Keep. And I said, okay, it's called Dragon's Keep. And so that's how that became, that's how that happened. But the Dragonheart thing, that was an afterthought, you know, with the dragon motif became so, like, you know, in the artwork that's about to be unveiled has got a nice dragon on it. You know, the artwork is perfect for the name. And, you know, and just having all these, you know, references to dragons around me made me think of the film Dragonheart. And it made me think of Draco, the dragon in it, and at how he was, and like, just a cool dragon. He was a cool dragon, you know, like he was the coolest dragon. You know, I took whatever philosophy that stuff had, and I put it in as an afterthought for Dragon's Keep. And, you know, but yeah, I mean, oh, I love Dragonheart, and you know, I always have since it came out. Yeah, that's how Dragonheart got into it. It was appears totally appropriate for it.
What drew you to Dragonheart specifically, as opposed to any other film about dragons? I mean, there's Pete's Dragon, there's Dragon
Slayer.
Yes, there Slayer.
Is. Yeah. Yes, there is. Yes, there
yeah,
is.
Yeah, so what attracted you to Dragonheart specifically? Yeah.
Okay, well, Dragonheart had, as far as I'm concerned, they did a really good job on the CGI on Draco. You know, like his looks are really, like, you know, they're tough, but like he's also got this like this wizened like look to him.
Sound like one who tried.
Failed. So I no longer try to change the world, Dragon. I just try to get by in it.
But I went for Draco because he was nice. He's cordial. He is intelligent. He is cool. He is calm under pressure. You know, but he can let that fire go when he wants to. Like, you know, he can deal some positive damage when you know the peasants need it.
Yeah they did a really excellent job with the CG for
they did yeah, you know, he's got like these nice cool dragon looks, but it's just he's got this wizened face. It's just like, oh well, yeah, it's just, and you know, and his demeanor, what he says, his whole philosophy is just wise. And I just thought, you know, like, why not put that into Dragon's Keep? Why not? Like, that is such a cool concept to throw in there.
So did the dragon, so I'm actually looking at the cover for Dragon's Keep right now. Did the dragon on the cover who's sitting in front of the bonfire, did he light that with his nostrils? That's what I want to know.
Yes, he did.
I can, I really can.
He absolutely did. One nostril.
Yes, I can do it. I really can.
Sorry, Bowen. I hope you like it well done.
Yeah, I love that.
It's so great.
Yeah, it is.
It's so great. I really liked that character too. When I first saw that movie, I did think that he was very inspiring.
Oh,
and
man,
you know, I don't hear anything about that movie anymore. So I thought it was pretty interesting that you would revive it in some way.
Really?
Through an album in 2022. Yeah.
I actually haven't heard a lot about it either lately. And I've been curious about it because I haven't heard about it lately, and I thought it was such a great movie. So I've done some Google searches on it, and it turns out that most people who like Dragonheart think that it is the best dragon movie ever made. Like, there's dragon movie fans out there, you know, they have all differing opinions, but a lot of them do say that Dragonheart is the best dragon movie of all time. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And they just go into Draco and how he is, and Bowen and how he is, and they go into the daughter of the peasant, they go into Einan, they go in, you know, just every aspect of the movie they've gone into, and just they'll explain it to death, and then just like, wow, like, you really think this movie is that good? Like, as good as I think it is. Thanks. Like, wow, cool. But I would love to spread that if I could. Interest in that movie, Dragonheart, because it's a great movie. I definitely recommend it. Guys, check it out. It's great. Dragonheart from 1996.
This is now officially a Dragonheart fan podcast. I can't avoid it. That's just the momentum. We've gone over the Dragonheart cliff.
Yep, we have. It's over. It's over, man. To the stars for us, man. To the stars.
So you used to be part of the black metal community. Do you still feel like you're part of a music community with your current work?
To be honest with you, no.
Hmm.
I don't feel like I'm part of a community. I'm on my own. That's how I feel. But it's not a problem. I mean, you know, I don't care who listens to my music. Like, you know, I welcome everyone that wants to listen to my music, you know, and like, it's kind of weird feeling like you're on your own, because like, it's you, when you're used to being part of a community, you're used to getting a lot of support and like a lot of, you know, although I gotta say for support, Fish Prince, my brother, he's been the best towards me as far as like a record label goes. Like, he's amazing. Also, you know, I do have to give props to Alexi from Satanath Records from helping me out in my early 2000s, in my still black metal days. You know, as I was coming out of black metal, he was still supporting me, so I have to give him mega respect for that. Great guy. You know, but like, you don't find a lot of support when you don't associate yourself with the scene anymore. And I guess I've just kind of learned how to deal with it. And I just, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not really asking for a lot of support anymore. You know, I've been doing this a long time. And in the beginning, I was asking for support left and right. You know what I mean? And right now, you know, and this is just kind of recently, too, that I realized this. It's just like, you know, like, you don't have to ask for support to do what you want to do, you know, but, you know, it's nice. It's super nice, you know, but you don't have to ask for support. You know, you don't have to have support to do what you want to do. So, you know, it's kind of like I've been at peace with not being the most popular person on the planet. I just don't consider myself part of any scene. It's not that I have any, I'm not against anybody. I'm not against any scene. I just don't consider myself part of anything, you know. Like, I would say Dungeon Synth, but Dungeon Synth has more of an ethos connection to black metal, which is, you know, it's just not where I'm at right now anymore. So I wouldn't say I'm Dungeon Synth, you know, but few people call me vaporwave, which I don't agree with. It's not vaporwave.
I mean, that's a tough, that's tough to make an argument to pin that on your music. I disagree with that as well.
But some people do think, there's a few people out there that I'm sure think I'm a vaporwave artist, which is very interesting, to say the least. Yes.
Oh, do you think that's like an aesthetic thing because of like the CG covers that you sometimes have? What do you think that is?
The CG covers are more of just chance happening, you know, just who's doing my artwork at the time, you know. And I can't say that, you know, my first few album covers weren't CG at all. And I think CG came in when actually when I did Amorph, that record back in 2021. That's when I first had a digital artist do something for Cryostasium. But if you see any like CG influence work in my past, that's kind of cool. I wouldn't expect that, but that's cool.
Early EPs have kind of a, say, kind of an abstract quality to their, to them.
The first EP was actually a real painting, but that was kind of like my bad almost. to get a little too candid here, I was working at Staples at the time in the copy center. This artist came in and he was a total jerk to me for 3 hours. He didn't know why a Staples color copier wouldn't be able to print photo quality. And he was going on and on about it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take your painting for my cover.
Okay, well, I see that you are crediting yourself and somebody called Onslaught on the Bandcamp.
Oh, that's my friend Alex.
Okay.
Yeah, he was that's Alex Spina, aka Alex Onslaught. He's the former owner of Bestial Onslaught Productions, and he's a very good friend of mine as well.
So the self-titled EP from 2005, that's not your first release.
That's the release I am talking about. I do not want to divulge the name of the actual artist. You know, but I will say some, you know, there were some alterations to that cover, a little bit of some alterations, some color alterations to it. Other than that, it was unchanged.
I mean, that is a real dab.
You know, when you're 20 years old and you're working in a Staples and that's all you care about is like music, smoking weed and chicks and, you know, like, you know, just stuff like that, you know, it's like, you know, you don't make the best decisions, you know, like around, you know, but like, I think at that time I was actually, 26. So 26 year olds don't make the best decisions all the time.
Well, it is a cool cover. And obviously it's not a straight up reproduction of the original.
It is not. No. We made sure it was altered enough not to be even close to the original. Like, I mean, the shapes were similar, but the colors were not.
I mean, again, a real flex. Whoever's listening to this, be nice to the associates at Staples or Office Max or wherever you're at.
Yes. That's a great PSA. And it's kind of real because the people who work at retail locations, you know, they're just basically like you and me. And, you know, they just want to get by and they don't need somebody breathing down their throat for pencils. For a half hour, you know, and this is, you know, like just, you know, I don't think this is people's fault, but, and I think they don't realize it, but when they go into a retail store, it's like they turn into the demanding person, you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't think they even realize it because that's once they leave the store, they're all cool again. So I don't know what it is about retail stores, but yes, people, that guy. You be nicer.
Okay, we've established that that even if you aren't satanic, you're not above revenge.
I'm not. Oh man, I'm not. I'm not, man. I'm not 100% totally good, you know, like I don't know who is, but I for the most part, I try to treat everyone, you know, just everyone with respect, you know, that's just my thing, you know, like I wasn't treated with much respect in the past. So I'm not sure why, but I wasn't. And so I don't like to see what happened to me happen to other people at any age. Yeah. So, you know, I just try to respect everyone. I really do. You know, it's getting easier too with time. It's getting easier with time and with age.
About your Project Zero Zero release?
Sure.
Yeah, because that was actually my introduction to your work, and I really appreciate
really?
It.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, cool. See, I had a conscious influence on that record, and that was Mysticum. Mysticum was my influence on Project Zero Zero all the way. Yep. I actually said to myself, I would like to put out a Mysticum style record, and I would like to put Vocaloid on it and see what happens. So I did.
Yeah, I really, really liked your version of that combination of black metal production and, you know, instrumentation, and the addition of that of a computer generated voice. I thought that was really striking.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Not many people have, and even in the Vocaloid circles, I'm known, but I'm not regarded as any good. So to hear that coming from you is, thank you very much. I kind of worked very hard on the Vocaloid there, so that makes me very happy to hear. Thank you.
Like I said, it was the first thing that I heard by you, and it really got me interested in your project and just hearing what else you had to offer, especially that first track, Inebriate, where
I
really stressed the vocal on that track. Really, you really pressed it, which I thought was what that song needed, for sure.
It's I love the vocal line in that song. It's good. It's one of my favorites off the album too, so yeah, I can definitely feel you on that one. And it's interesting you mentioned Project again, because I'll bring up a fun fact about Project Zero Zero. I recorded a completely different version of that for Satanath Records, where the Vocaloid was pushed in the background and my vocals were pushed in the forefront. And looking back on that, and I mean no disrespect to Alexey or his choices or anything, but for me, that was not the right way to go with it. I that's why I re-released it with Fish Prints, because I wanted to, you know, I came across the original, you know, recordings, and I was just like, holy shit, like we should get this out there. This is the version. And so my brother agreed. And so therefore he re-released it.
That's really interesting to hear, because I've heard both versions, and the latter one that you released with your brother is definitely the superior version, and that's the
so
one
too.
That I wrote about for my blog. I love that version.
Thank you so much, man.
You're welcome. I think that was definitely the right call.
Much appreciated, dude. Thank you.
And I'm really glad that you confirmed that, you know, that there are two different versions out there, and that they're released with, you know, different philosophies for the mixing. Because when I first encountered the project, I was like, okay, you know, I'm gonna research this, look into it. And, you know, I was finding these two different versions. I'm like, okay, why are there two different versions? And like, is like,
which
what
one's
am I supposed
the
to be getting
one?
About? Yeah, well, yeah, no. Well, why?
Well,
I just assumed that there was a different
versions. Is that what you're saying?
I thought there was definitely a different philosophy behind each, but also there was just like this thing where it's like, okay, is one version real and is one version not? Like, is this just like a hallucination that I'm having?
No, it's not. No, definitely not.
Want a fan remix? Like what?
Yeah.
What is going on?
No, one's not a fan remix. But no, it was basically, no, I used to be a hella revisionist. So like, I I thought, you know, I first released the original project on, you know, my own label, Metropolitan State Productions, back in the day. And it didn't I actually, you know, this was still when I was young, and it was just, like I said to myself, like, well, what if I made it more in a black metal style? Maybe people would like it better. And that didn't happen. So that was my first lesson in writing for myself.
Well, what was the lesson? Was it that you should always feel free to revise your work,
No,
or okay?
the lesson was that you shouldn't write for another audience. You shouldn't
Oh.
write. You shouldn't write to try to get more popular or get more attention or get more, coverage, get more accolades, get more, it's not like that all the time. So it taught me, that was my first lesson in teaching me to really, really, really write for myself as opposed to other people. Yeah, I mean,
Okay.
I, that's it's funny that you say that too, because my work before that wasn't for other people. I didn't write a single thing that was for other people, but it was just that this version of project I had wasn't, it just didn't seem to get a catch, you know what I mean? So I figured if I, you know, and I, it was all like, my audience is mostly metal. Like if I metalize it more, maybe people will get it more, and no, they didn't. They actually got it less. So, oh man. Yeah, it's just like, okay, write what you want. Who cares what anyone else thinks? Seriously, like really seriously, like you're on the right track, buddy. Writing things for yourself. Because that was the first time I ever tried to revise something for the public, and I'll never do that again. Never, never. It's just not my way anymore at all. It was never my way, and I tried it once, and I'll never do it again. I prefer the way things are now.
Right, where you're free to write what you want to write.
Exactly. Yep. Heaven forbid, if I wanted to write a country album, a pop country album, I could. But oh my God, I would never. I'd never write a pop country record.
I'd
But
like to hear you try some different styles, though. I feel
oh
like
well, have you heard of my other band, Dystopiat?
I have. Yeah. It's
Yeah,
more of a
yeah.
DB type thing. Yeah.
It's a classic DB, DB punk. That's what it is. Yeah. And if we I've recorded a few records under Dystopiat, but I actually found a band a couple of years ago. So things have been going slow because we only practice, every other couple of weeks or so. But we're starting to get very much close to being able to play shows and do that kind of thing. We're gonna record soon, so I'm looking forward to that, hearing all my punk songs that I did being done with a real live band. That's what, that's what I wanted out of Dystopia, and then that's what I got eventually. So, but yeah, I'm glad you heard of that stuff. Hopefully like I said, we'll be recording soon. It's going to be a simple recording, probably 8-track, nothing more than that, but doesn't need any more than that.
We're earning our money now, aren't we?
Is there anything other than your upcoming EP that you want to promote? When is your Dragon Keep album going to be dropping? And I'm sorry if I referred to it as an EP, if you
No,
considered
that
it an
it's.
album. Okay.
I do consider it an album, but you can call it an
Okay.
EP. That's fine. It's 4 songs,
Four songs, yeah. It's
I call it an
on the
album,
shorter
you call it
side.
an EP. Yeah, it's on the shorter side
Okay.
of an album. Yeah. But yeah, it's coming out December 2nd of this year. It's coming out on LP and also digitally. It's coming out on my own record label, Draco Records. And that's, no, I'm not joking. I actually started a record label called Draco Records.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, it's got Draco in the logo and everything. He's there making a wise face. So like, it's cool. Yeah, it's just cool to have a nice little label for yourself, and that's being distributed through Fishprints. So if you are interested in checking it out, check out the Fish Prince Bandcamp. You can hear it there. And also, a day before it comes out, December 1st, there will be a YouTube premiere for the Dragon's Keep video album.
Wait, so what's going on with the video album?
Ooh, well, it's a mix of all different things. I didn't expect it to come out this way. Excuse me again. And I did not expect the scenarios either. But it's four different scenarios. I thought it was going to be one big tale, but nope, four completely different scenarios. And so I don't want to get into it too much. I don't want to be like a spoiler, you know, but like it's very, the visuals are very psychedelic, very, how can I describe it? It's not random. There are four very varied things. And, you know, one's basically like, you know, about like going through the halls of medicine and coming out feeling okay, basically. And there's a whole video for that. And then the video for Dragon's Keep, that I took footage from Dragonheart, actually, which I hear that the owner of Dragonheart is very lenient on letting people use Dragonheart footage on YouTube. I mean, I got a strike for putting it up there, you know, on private, but I also got a notification that said, you know, it wasn't a problem to use it either. So I wonder what's going on with the guy behind Dragonheart, but I'd like to thank him personally, you know, like, thank you so much for being so lenient with your work. You know, and I definitely do not credit myself with that. That's all, you know, that's Dragonheart, you know, that's definitely Dragonheart. But Dragon's Keep video is basically, you know, a montage of Draco and all the cool things he's done, all the wizened parts, like, you know, it's all that. Then you got Bridgerton Ways, which is a third song, which is Bridgerton from Netflix. Don't ask me why I picked that, because I just did. The last song is called Chip Ascends, and it's I want to say that video is about Chip Davis from Mannheim Steamroller and his inner psyche.
Okay. Yeah, and you said that is going to be premiering the day before the album drops.
Yep, December 1st. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
On YouTube.
Yeah. Have to keep an eye out for that. Yeah. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, and keep your eye out for the dystopia, upcoming live band dystopia EP. You know, what I'm guessing within the next couple of months, it's going to be ready. Okay. And check us out on the road. When we announce it, check out Dystopia on the road. We'll only be in Massachusetts for now, but hey, feel like coming to Mass? Come on over. come see Dystopia and then go home. But yeah, you know. Yeah.
One last question. If you were to apply an accurate genre tag to Cryostasium currently is, what would that tag be?
I would say the closest thing would be neoclassical or VGM.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see both of those. I see both of those working.
Yeah. Oh, why I didn't mention this before. I'll just say this real quickly. Okay. Why I didn't mention this before. I didn't, but video game music is a huge influence on my music. There we go. I just said it there. So love video game music. It's a big influence on my stuff.
Yeah. And I feel like that genre tag has really evolved from simply meaning like the OST for a video game, but, you know, just sort of an interaction with electronic sounds. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
An investigation of electronic music. Yeah.
That absolutely
fits a certain aesthetic. Yeah. Yeah. And I could definitely see that applying to your sound. Well, Cody, I appreciate you clarifying not only what genre you want people to put you in for the time being, maybe not forever.
To be honest with you, I don't want people to put me in any genre. I want to be in the genre of good music. That's it. Good music.
All right. Well, Cody, I really appreciate your time tonight. It was
really
fun talking
with you. I
appreciate
yours, Mick. It was fun talking to you too, Rip Mick. That was amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I love the interview. Thank you.